Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, what is your relationship with horror stories, with horror movies, with horror fiction?
You're
a fan?
Yeah, I would say that I'm not as much anymore, and I became really sensitive to horror in any sort of form. After my daughter was born, actually, while I was pregnant. So I have been slowly ramping back up, back up into zombie land. But I used to love the Ripper stuff. I'm not a Ripperologist. But that was something that occupied my mind for many, many years. And,
a Ripper enthusiast. A Ripthusiast.
Sure. Okay. Sure. I like that. That's stuff that I think is, absolutely frightening and takes hold of your mind, and you can't help but be entranced by it. And I'm pretty sure that you have a good lengthy relationship with horror.
Yeah. I mean, from very early on, possibly because my mom's explanation for this is that they always made too much out of Halloween, or that they really celebrated Halloween in our household. So it kind of instilled an early fascination with the macabre, and perhaps that's the case, but I mean, from a very early age, I was fascinated with these fantastic stories and settings and any kind of creepy tales. I remember, when I was in younger grades, we would go to the video store to rent movies as a family, or I'd go there with my dad, and we were not horror movie renting people. But I would sneak over, I would go over to the horror aisle, and I would walk down, and I would look at all the VHS covers. And it was a pretty crazy experience doing that. Because on one hand, especially back in the 90s, these VHS covers, they, even the crappiest film might have a really awesome, bit of poster art on the cover, a really title, a really awesome sell. And as we've discussed before, I think that like the first episode we did with each other or the second about people turning inside out, there was one film that had a picture of a guy turning inside out on the cover. And the actual film has nothing to do with that. And it's
didn't you say he had like jeans on too?
Yeah,
and
he
that
had
was
jeans
what was
on.
So disconcerting is he was turning himself inside out, or he was inside out and yet he had jeans on.
Like maybe he knew he was going to turn inside out. And he has a real aversion to nudity, so he swallowed some jean shorts before the poisonous mist could transform
that's
him.
That's how
something.
That happened.
But they always had, you know, even if it was something just crazy out of the ordinary, just a lost B film, it might have some really neat cover going on. And then the mainstream hits, they all had fascinating covers, be it like a Friday the 13th or a Nightmare on Elm Street. And I, you know, I'd always build up in my mind this creative version of what that film must consist of. And generally, it's not an idea that would stand the test of time when I actually watched the film later on down the road. So, from a very early point, I was very interested in horror stories. And some of the first books I started reading really hardcore were Stephen King books. And then we got really into Lovecraft. And I still read a certain amount of horror. Some of it maybe is a little more literary. Some of it is significantly less literary, depending on, I guess, what my mood is. And I write stories that are horror or horror-esque in nature, so.
Oh, yeah, right. We'll get to the crux of what we're talking about in a moment, but do you want to talk about that for a second?
As soon as I'm through rambling?
No. About what you've written and some upcoming information about that.
Oh, yeah. I do have a book of short stories that's going to be out eventually, but it's a book of Southern short stories.
And it's called?
It's going to be called The Grave Stompers, I believe.
Yeah, okay. So look forward, and we'll give you guys some more information on that. But I think that's really exciting, so I think
I'm excited about it. Just got a little more editing, tweaking to do. The topic here, we're talking about horror. We're talking about our fascination with horror.
And kids, fascination.
Kids
right?
fascinated, because that's the thing. Like I mentioned earlier, from a very early age, I was interested in what these stories consisted of, even if they were forbidden to me, and probably to a certain extent because they were forbidden to me, but all kids seem to have this obsession on some level with what is waiting in the closet, right? What is behind the shower curtain or lurking in the bottom of the toilet?
You know, and that is so true, because I remember just hating these stories when I was little, but loving them at the same time. Like, tell me again. And then just, sitting in my bed thinking about how a severed hand was going to come and strangle me to death.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the toilet story.
Oh, they did think, it made me think about the toilet first for a moment, because I kind of think at some point I thought a severed hand might come out of the toilet too when I was little.
I was poisoned by the VHS covers, because they had these awful Ghoulies films.
Oh, yeah.
And the cover arts are amazing, because they picture these really bad-looking puppets. These were not Henson creations, but like horrible little goblin puppets coming out of the toilet. And the idea, I think the tagline was like, they get you in the end or something.
Oh.
Because you're exposed, you're vulnerable on the toilet. And as a kid, there are other anxieties tied up with using the toilet anyway. And then throw in the fact that there might be a goblin down there that might eat you in the bum.
In the bum. That's problematic right there.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about clowns for a moment.
Okay.
Because, you're talking about toilets and scary stuff, you got to go to clowns. I'm not the only person who's frightened of clowns. Apparently, this is something that a lot of people have a phobia of. And there is one study that I thought was very interesting. A University of Sheffield study asked more than 250 children ages 4 to 16 what they thought of the idea of using clown imagery to decorate a hospital children's ward. Because this is really, they were trying to figure out what they wanted to make this ward look like, to make the kids feel more at home. According to Dr. Penny Curtis, who helped conduct the study, quote, "We found that clowns were universally disliked by children. Some found them quite frightening and unknowable."
Unknowable.
I thought that was a really interesting word choice, because I thought that, I think, is part of the problem with clowns. And I think anybody who's listening that has the same feeling about clowns that I do, there's this idea that, there's someone hiding behind a mask, not showing their true self.
Well, and their skin is ghostly pale.
They have grease paint. It's just, and they're doing, creepy tricks.
Sometimes they're saving rodeo people from certain goring at the hands of a bull?
You
got to respect the rodeo clown.
They're
doing good work.
I don't know about that. I think the rodeo clown is perhaps the most frightening. Because then you just put a cowboy head on top. It doesn't work.
Well, one way I see this tying into what we're talking about today, the rodeo clown especially, is kind of distracting you from the idea of death. And maybe we sort of see through that to a certain extent, you know? And we see the con going on, and we don't want to buy into it. That's not a clown having fun. That is one dude trying to save another guy from getting run through with bullhorns.
I don't know about that. I think that is the clown trying to add more distraction so that the radio person will be gored to death.
Okay.
I do not see anything there that is genuine, that's beneficial going on.
Well, tell me this. One more thing about clowns here. And I encounter the clown phobia a lot because it seems like everybody has it.
It started with jesters for me, by the way.
Jesters?
For the record.
No, just court jesters?
Yep.
Those guys
can't
are great.
Can't stand them. Mm-mm.
Well, with court jesters, I feel like they're a little more honest because the court jester is obviously addled and is also in such close proximity to a mad ruler. They're really hanging on by a thread. They have to walk that line every day. Can I make the king laugh without actually winding up in the dungeon,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
So I feel for those guys a lot more. But tell me this. How about the sad clowns? How about the sad hobo clowns like Emmett Kelly?
Are you kidding? Like, that's the worst.
How is that the worst? You see him and he's kind of mopey. Maybe a little sad.
A hobo clown, you know, with stubble on the chin, with a cigarette hanging out, you know, two coins in his pocket, has a hole in it. That's uplifting for a child right there.
Well, they're hobo. He has that hobo mystique about him, you know? He's a traveler. He's got stories.
That's a new
perfume. He has experiences.
Hobo mystique.
He wants to share. Yeah, hobo mystique.
Okay, so the question is, why do we keep going to material that unearths these uneasy feelings? So why did I read Stephen King's It, and I couldn't put it down, you know, and it features a prominent clown, right? I think most people, when they think about clowns, they usually think about Stephen King's. Yep. It. Why do we keep doing this? And scientists believe that the answer is that humans have evolved to actually enjoy fear.
Hmm.
And that there's a type of personality that really enjoys it. And we've talked about this person before. It's the neophiliac.
It's like the type T, right?
Type T, yeah. This is the person who craves new experiences, really wants a jolt, and that's because they have a lot more dopamine flowing. And we already know that there are genetic markers for this, right? So this is something that is hardwired in some people. But that being said, even if you're not a type T person or a neophiliac, usually most people enjoy a good scare to some degree.
So should I walk us through the brain?
Take us through the shadow of the valley
here?
Of death.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So let's say you're watching something scary or reading something scary. I don't know. Let's say it's Texas Chainsaw Massacre. That was one that always got
me. That's a good one.
So you're watching this, right? You have the horror on the screen and in the soundtrack because it has a fabulous sound design. Runs into your ears, into your eyes, and it all winds up in this little almond-shaped clump of neurons mm-hmm. called the amygdala. All right.
Right. We've talked about the amygdala a lot. Processes all sorts of emotions.
Yep. Front and center. Yeah, it's vital to emotional processing, especially things like love, pleasure, and, of course, fear. So, amygdala, activate. Unleashes all these brain and body cocktails into your body, all these hormones, all right?
Cortisol, adrenaline.
Yeah. Prompts the adrenal glands to churn out cortisol, which is a stress hormone.
Mm-hmm.
And high levels of this can actually impede insulin and causes the rise in blood sugar. Gives you a little extra fuel
mm-hmm.
because the brain is telling you something scary is happening and you might have to either run from it or attack it with a stick.
So your pulse is quickening.
Yeah, so you need extra oxygen for that, so you're breathing faster.
Mm-hmm.
The body's saying, all right, let's do it. We're going to fight or flight. I'm going to make sure that you have enough oxygen for it. Heart is racing so that oxygen can get to your muscles. Your appetite stalls because if you're about to have to fight Leatherface, you don't want to have to stop for a snack break or a granola bar halfway through it.
Right.
Which I think would be a nice take because, you know, in the slasher films, what always happens to the survivor lady, right? She ends up knocking down Jason Voorhees or somehow incapacitating our killer,
mm-hmm.
kicking him in the nethers or something, hitting him on the head, and then they're down. And instead of doing the logical thing, which is fight or flight, which is either run all the way away
mm-hmm.
into the next county or never stop hitting the downed maniac in the face with a brick. Fight it. Finish it, right? Instead,
right.
they sit there next to the killer and maybe weep a little bit until they actually wake back up again and it all starts anew. But it would be a nice twist if they stopped and they actually used that time to have a granola bar.
Like a power bar. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Little sacket of snack mix.
That would be, you know, if anybody's listening and they're writing the next screenplay for Scream 10 or whatever we're on now.
All right. So, but that's not all. Your appetite is stalled
mm-hmm.
and you're sweating because we don't want you to overheat in this fight or flight scenario. All right, your pupils are dilated so that you can see the enemy better
mm-hmm.
because, the body's getting you ready to either fight it or flight it. And finally, the cortisol has saturated your bloodstream and feeds back into the amygdala to boost the perception of danger. So it also reinforces your memory of that initial fright so that you'll still feel a little jumpy. Because the idea here is, like, I got attacked by Jason Voorhees today.
Mm-hmm.
I might be attacked by another Jason Voorhees tomorrow.
Okay.
So it stays in your system for a few days. That's why something frightful happens. You're maybe a little jumpy for a little bit afterwards for, days.
Yeah.
And this all happens within about 3 seconds.
And while all this is happening, information also travels to your prefrontal cortex. And this is the part of the brain responsible for consciously evaluating danger. And it tells you, thankfully, that this is just a movie. And so what happens is you are completely overstimulated, right?
Yeah.
And the resulting spillover is processed as reward instead of fear. Because all of a sudden you think, yes, okay, it's okay. There's no imminent threat. I have actually survived what I just imagined for myself.
Yeah, because the other thing, if you're about to potentially fight Jason Voorhees
mm-hmm.
or run from him, the body is also helping you out by making sure that their endorphins released into your bloodstream, because you're going to sustain injuries if you're fighting him or running through the woods to escape him. So you end up having dopamine flowing through the system, this feel-good drug that if you're not actually having to fight or run away,
mm-hmm.
Is just going to be there to make you feel good.
You know, and you mentioned too that cortisol lingers in your blood for a couple of days, and that actually feeds into this other idea that it's useful for your amygdala to be processing both fear and pleasure, because you don't necessarily want to separate those two forms of stimulation, because situations change on a dime. What could be pleasant now could in 5 minutes, 10 minutes, a day later be actually very fearful or unpleasant. So the brain has to respond accordingly, and it's actually a pretty brilliant way to adapt very quickly to situations, to have the amygdala having this double duty.
Now, another huge aspect of fear, and this certainly flows over into our enjoyment of horror films and horror fiction and quick improv scares around the house, and that is the social context of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because like a lot of things, we learn how it works from seeing how others use it. We see what other people's fear response is, and from there we begin to piece together our own appropriate fear responses.
It's true. And, we had mentioned kids and the fact that they actually like to be scared. And I even see this in my 3-year-old at around age 2.
Mm-hmm.
She started saying, "Chase me," or, pretending that I was, T-Rex or something. And you do see this in kids, and they really are trying to work out situations. And this is the idea behind why they do like to get scared. Psychologist Paul Bloom's lab has actually shown 4- and 5-year-olds films of other children reacting to movies. Now, he had to do that because for ethical reasons, he couldn't get kids into his lab and then scare them, right? But he could show them images of children who were scared, who were watching scary movies. When asked which of the movies they would want to see, because he showed them all different types of movies, boring movies, happy movies, sad movies, scary movies, the 4- and 5-year-olds preferred the happy films, of course, but they picked scary movies over the boring ones.
Hmm.
And he says parents automatically assume that children like stories with happy endings. And he cited The Little Engine That Could. But he says, what about The Little Engine that tried and failed? It might be that children would find it perversely satisfying.
It's also worth noting here, not to jump too far ahead, but most mainstream horror films do have a happy ending.
Yeah.
You'll have a lot of bad stuff happen, but if they follow the more stereotypical story arc of these things, you still have everything come back around to some level of normalcy and some manner of a happy ending. Now, that does not hold true across the board. But if you think right. that some of the stuff that's really mainstream, the stuff that is actually up there in the box office, like Jaws, for instance, what happens at the end of Jaws? Spoiler, shark blows up.
Right. The bad guy, the boogeyman, is vanquished, really.
Right.
And so we see that over and over again in stories. We see fairy tales, right? And this is the stuff that we feed our children's mind with from the get-go. I remember that not too long ago, there were 500-year-old German fairy tales that were just unearthed. Mm-hmm. And one of them was particularly gruesome. It was about a witch who swallowed this girl. Or actually, the girl was trying to get away from the witch. She turned mm-hmm. into water. The witch swallowed her up. And so then the girl had to cut herself out of the witch's belly. And, you know, this, again, the reason why we're putting this sort of information out there, consciously or unconsciously, is because you're trying to teach kids about dangers in the world.
Right.
And that's what storytelling and really horror stories are trying to tell you. Like, there is some sort of moral code ascribed to what we're doing in the world. And there are consequences.
Yeah. And, of course, you have some of the nursery boogies were just all about trying to correct certain behaviors, like the long-legged scissor man, the whole rhyme about where basically it's you don't need to suck your thumb because if you keep sucking your thumb, the long-legged scissor man will show up and he will slice your thumbs off.
I have never heard that.
Oh, you really? There's a fun rhyme. If I'd thought about it ahead of time, I would have brought it in prepared so we could read it. But it's fun stuff.
Wow. Okay. I didn't get a lot of that kind of stuff read to me as a child. It was mostly like...
You didn't grow up in a Victorian nursery?
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm. It was mostly like environmental literature, like Pop Cane Park and stuff like that. There's this idea that children are learning what dangers are and people who they can trust and not trust. And there's something actually called Williams Syndrome in children and adults, and this... Actually, the syndrome doesn't allow them to be fearful of anybody in any sort of social situation. They are hypersocial, mm-hmm. people with Williams syndrome. They love people, and they are literally pathologically trusting of people.
Right. Now, not to imply that all hypersocial activity in small kids is definitely tied up in this condition. You also have situations where kids will be hypersocial because they've grown up in an early environment where... It is advantageous to be ultra social with various people moving through their lives, particularly in, say, an institutionalized setting like an orphanage.
As a way to adapt. Mm-hmm. But with people with true Williams syndrome, researchers actually think that their limbic system, the part of the brain that regulates emotion, is wired differently. And there appears to be a dysregulation in one of the chemicals, oxytocin. We've called that the love hormone before, that signals when to trust and when to distrust. And parents of kids with Williams syndrome have to be really vigilant about teaching their children to distrust people because they really sense no fear whatsoever and will run up to anybody and pretty much say, hey, what's going on? Come home with me.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to discuss catharsis and our old friend, benign violation.
Oh, that old friend.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
All right, we're back. So, benign violation. You may remember this from when we talked about humor. What makes something funny, according to some theories of humor, is the fact that we're threatened, but not really. Something that seems like it's going to kill us is actually just a joke, and therefore we laugh. It's our way of communicating to our fellow cave people that that there's no real threat, that the what we thought was a saber-toothed tiger jumping out of the underbrush to consume us was actually just Thog having a laugh at our expense.
And then we all kind of laugh because we were so frightened,
yeah,
and it's a relief.
And then we sacrifice Thog to our red gods.
Right, but then the saber-toothed tiger in an actual horror film does come out right after the laughter moment. Right.
But the benign violation definitely plays into our consumption of horror because, mm-hmm. like we discussed earlier, all this stuff's going on in your brain. You're watching this horror movie. You're reading this horror book. Your body is responding accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
And then your brain kicks in and says, whoa, just to keep in mind, this is just a movie. It's not real. And thank goodness that part of the brain is there to remind us of this. But it results in this benign violation area where we're threatened but not really. There's something horrible, but it actually can't hurt us.
Right. So you know that the threat's not there, and I do think it's very interesting that it has such a parallel with humor.
Mm-hmm. And indeed, like we discussed in the humor situation, what happens when you go to see a horror movie in a movie theater? Well, when people are not checking their email, talking on the phone, smoking illegal substances, or talking with their friends, or eating popcorn, eating nachos.
Making out,
drinking sodas really loudly, talking to their child who is inappropriately attending the film.
You have a long list.
It is a long list of things that happen that are not movie viewing in a movie.
Like, you just took that list out of your pocket and you just went down.
But one of the other things they do is they laugh when something horrible happens, which is something I line up on that list of things I hate about seeing films with other people list. But it's something that actually lines up with the science and what we're looking at here, because it's the benign violation. It's the fact that something horrible happened and they didn't die. It produces laughter, and I can't get too irritated at that because it's tied into our evolutionary history.
Well, it is cathartic.
Yeah.
Right? So,
but here's the thing.
What?
So why are they eating nachos? Because if they're scared, they should have their... That's the other thing that gets me. It's like people will go into a film to see something like Schindler's List or some sort of horror film, and they have nachos. Why?
They're going to pay for it afterward, but that's not your problem, man.
But they're going to lose their appetite during the fearful moments. Anyway.
What are you going to do? Like, say, hey, man, don't eat those nachos. Like, you're going to produce too much stomach acid because you're in an altered state.
Maybe. And too much noise. They should soak those things more in that yellow gook beforehand so they're nice and soggy. Anyway, I got off the subject. What was I talking about?
Well, I think we were talking about trying to master our fear and catharsis, really.
Yes, catharsis. Catharsis, just to remind everybody, this is the purging of emotions or relieving of emotional tensions, especially through certain kinds of art, such as tragedy or music.
It's the pleasure that comes from the relief that follows, right?
Yeah.
And it's interesting to note that a lot of horror flicks are really geared toward teenagers and 20-somethings. John Edward Campbell, who is an expert in media studies at Temple University, said that that people in those age groups are more likely to look for intense experiences, while older people have stimulation fatigue. He says life's real horrors scare them, or they don't find them entertaining anymore or interesting.
Yeah, and then Freud, he even piped in on this. He suggests that horror was appealing because it traffics in, quote, thoughts and feelings that have been repressed by the ego, but which seem vaguely familiar. So lining up with that and also outside of that, you horror is a form of this can be this form of therapy where we're dealing with the things that we're afraid of, but in forms that make more sense,
mm-hmm.
be it a social concern that is personified or some sort of just you know, the fear of death personified into something that can be dealt with on a more of a clear cut level. We've talked about zombies before. Like, you can look at zombies that way. Zombies as this clear cut personification of various fears that can be dealt with in a pretty clear cut manner. Most of our fears we can't shoot dead in the street with a shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
And still maintain a fair standing in society. Zombies and the zombie fiction allows us to engage in that kind of a world where there is good and there is zombie, and they are cleanly dealt with through a specified means of taking them down.
You know, I was just thinking too, and when you're young, when you're really young, and then even when you're a teenager and in your early 20s, you are still grappling with this idea that one day you will die, right? This ultimately is the problem that we're dealing with. This is why horror films are so entrancing to us.
Yeah, you can boil a lot of horror down to just basically us trying to figure out mortality.
Yeah, it's a basic human condition of existential fear, mm-hmm. right? Like, we know that eventually all of us will be entering that doorstep of death. And so I was just thinking about how you said that you might be overly wrapped with the macabre because of growing up and celebrating Halloween. And the same thing in my family happened. I mean, my dad would play the pit and the pendulum against the house, like protected against the house every
awesome.
Year. And he would turn our yard into a graveyard. And our favorite movie as a family to this mm-hmm. day, and this was when I was 5 and my brother was 7, is Harold and Maude.
Okay.
Which
is about a very morose kid.
It's about death and his preoccupation with, I can't remember.
He's,
But Holly was telling me how disconcerting it is to see him in pictures today.
Because he was in The Life Aquatic. He was the accountant.
Yes, yeah. But his character was preoccupied with death. he would pull off these hoax deaths all the time, or suicides. And my brother used to do the same thing. So he would, like, you know, we'd be eating dinner and he'd get up to go to the bathroom. And the next thing you know, you would see him dragging his body, if you've ever seen someone do that, across the threshold, you know, from the door, so it looked like someone was dragging his body. He was always pretending to be Harold. And now that I think about it, that was a really fun way for us to kind of get a bead on that subject, on death, and work it out, I suppose.
One of my favorite
cathartic.
It's very cathartic. One of my favorite commentators on all of this is Stephen King, who in his intro to his short story collection Night Shift. Has a lot of really interesting things to say about not only the craft of writing stories and his own experiences with writing horror, but also what he sees as the meaning of it. And he keeps making allusions to the, you know, you've heard the idea of the blind men and the elephant, right? Where there's an elephant and there's this pack of blind men and they're pawing at the elephant and each one is feeling a different part of the elephant and thus describing it differently. Like mm-hmm. The blind man touching the legs of the elephant says, oh, it's like a pole. And then the person touching the trunk says, oh, it's like a snake. And King makes this argument that horror allows us to paw at this equally unseen body that is death. I'm going to read a quick quote from him. He says, "Children learn fear quickly. They pick it up off their mother or father's faces when the parent comes into the bathroom and sees them with the bottle of pills or the safety razor. Fear makes us blind, and we touch each fear with all the avid curiosity of self-interest, trying to make a whole out of 100 parts, like the blind men with their elephant. We sense the shape. Children grasp it easily, forget it, and relearn it as adults. The shape is there, and most of us come to realize what it is sooner or later. It is the shape of a body under a sheet. So I thought that sums it up rather nicely, as far as just horror as our wrestling with mortality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think anybody can put it better than Stephen King.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential and then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own? Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
And then there's all I've mentioned before, you know, monsters. Anytime we're dealing with monsters, monsters almost always signify something. They are not just a situation of, oh, you know, it'd be scary if we had there was a guy, but his head was a wolf's head. Wouldn't that be, that would be scary. Let's just throw that in there. I mean, that may be the level of thinking engaged in the creation of the particular story or myth, but deeper down, we even look to the word monster. The word monstrosity originates from the Latin monstrere, which means to show or illustrate a point. So all of our monsters, no matter how gross or poorly designed, they embody ideas, fears, and abstractions about the human condition, be it about death or disease, be it a social concern or what have you.
Even ourselves, how we can be unknowable to ourselves.
Exactly. Certainly when you look at Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. King also, in this intro, he describes horror, too, as a kind of replacement therapy, you know, where, and this gets a little into catharsis, but more along the lines of, I have certain things in my life that that cause me a certain level of anxiety, and wouldn't it be nice if I could replace that for a little bit with some imagined anxiety that's even worse.
So an escapism that makes my lot in life look not so bad.
Yeah, he says the horror story writer is not so different from the Welsh sin eater, who was supposed to take upon himself the sins of the dear departed by partaking of the dear departed's food. The tale of monstrosity and terror is a basket loosely packed with phobias. When the writer passes by, you take one of his imaginary horrors out of the basket, and you put one of your real ones in, at least for a time. Which I thought was an interesting way of looking at it.
Well, very cool. I think that these are different ways to kind of come at the subject. But at the end of the day, there's something that a psychologist named Glenn Walters of Cutstown University, what he said I thought was resonated with me. He said, "Control lost under the cover of darkness is rediscovered in the light of day. Danger posed by things unknown is reduced by increased knowledge and predictability." And I thought that is really what it's about. I mean, any sort of story is a bit of a training wheels for us to try to occupy this space in our mind when we try to imagine ourselves in these horrific moments. So it is instructive.
Yeah.
And fun.
Well,
in that context.
I'll be sure to do a blog post to go along with this podcast. And so as to cut down on time now, I will list some other favorite bits of horror fiction or horror film in that blog post, and you can check it out. So as we leave this podcast and our contemplation of fearful and horrible things and how...
real and imagined.
Yeah, real and imagined, and how looking into the darkness can help us conquer the darkness. Here's a little bit of geeky quotiness from one of my favorite authors, Frank Herbert. You'll recognize it. He said, "I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will permit it to pass over me and through me. And when it has gone past, I will turn the inner eye to see its path. Where fear has gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain."
Hallelujah.
Yeah. So whisper that in your mind next time you watch something frightening on TV that isn't the news.
If it bleeds, it leads. All right. Do we have... any mail there?
Yes. There's I feel like we probably went a little long, so I'm just going to have the robot share one of these with us. All right, this is from one Albert. Albert writes in and says, "Hi, Robert and Julie. I finished listening to the Centaur episode. Very interesting. Just wanted to pass on something regarding Centaur sex. John Varley, in his science fiction novel Titan, explored this very topic. Astronauts end up exploring a space station, and one of the species they meet are centaurs. These centaurs have both human genitalia and equine genitalia, and the two parts do not necessarily match, meaning a centaur with a male human package can have a female equine package. The author explores a lot of interesting topics in sexuality in this novel. I highly recommend it." That is awesome. John Varley, for those of you who are not familiar with him, he wrote a lot of science fiction back in the day. He also wrote one particular story called Overdrawn at the Memory Bank. And there was a kind of awesome, kind of cheesy PBS adaptation of this story starring Raul Julia back in the day. And it was actually featured on Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Adam's Family, Raul Julia?
Yeah, okay. that Raul Julia. Great actor, kind of a very cheesy production, a lot of kind of Matrix-y type special effects before we really had the ability to pull that off. But it's
so you could see the strings on them as they bent backward.
Yeah, but as cheesy as it is, there are some fabulous ideas explored in that. And so it doesn't come as too much of a surprise that John Varley also explored the topic of centaur sexuality. So there you go.
And penis placement and other equipment.
There you go. So it sounds like one worth checking out there. Thanks, Albert, for bringing that to attention. And if any of you would like to discuss the topic of centaur sexuality or horror with us, you know where to find us.
Both.
Yeah, both. There's a lot of overlap between those two topics, I would imagine. You can find us on Facebook, where we are Stuff to Blow Your Mind. And you can find us on Twitter, where our handle is Blow the Mind. Let us know your experiences with horror fiction, horror movies, what scares you, and what are your thoughts on the fright process inside your mind.
And you can always drop us a line at blowthemind@discovery.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.